And I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Sean M. from San Diego. All right. Thank you.
You guys know. My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. I want to start by saying I got bamboozled into Alcoholics Anonymous. I never had any intention of getting sober. So, you two new guys, if you're not here, if you don't want to get sober, I get that, because I didn't. Two guys introduced themselves as new. That stack of courtship slips over there says slightly different, but that's cool. I get that, too. When I got here, I didn't want to introduce myself as new. My sobriety date is May 16th. 2016. As those Pacific Group people say, I got a sponsor. He's kind of got a sponsor. I'm just kidding. He's over there right now. He is part of the prop of this show. You know those guys that like get asked to speak and they don't like to speak and they're afraid to stand in front of groups of people and everything like that? Yeah, I'm not that guy. I'm without a doubt my favorite speaker. I love my story. I love the sound of my voice even more. So prepare to be completely underwhelmed. What was that? This is a participation meeting. I am notorious for heckling at meetings, so I expect nonetheless. Please feel free to correct me on the spot corrections and heckle me. My sponsor, Gabe, once told me, he's told me a lot of prophetic stuff. A lot of it turns out to be just recycled trite stuff, and I'll get to that in a little while. But he once said, you know, we never say no to a request in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is an absolute honor and a privilege to be asked to speak and share my story. I'm kind of partial to it. He also told me anytime that you are asked to speak from the podium, you wear a suit.
Thank you.
You're welcome. At home, where it belongs. Says you also don't lie and you also don't cuss. I'm going to do my absolute best to stick to those other two. I don't mind wearing the suit because, let's face it, I make this look pretty good. The thing that I do mind is I got to wear, like, real shoes. So, I never know where to start. You would think the beginning is a good place to start, but I'm going to Quentin Tarantino this thing, right? So May 14th, 2016, I was sitting in my garage drinking Ernest and Julio Gallo and 7-Up. Sexiest last drink you've ever heard of. For you old school, hardcore AA guys, you're going to hear the word cocaine and you're going to hear the word methamphetamine. I was snorting coke and smoking methamphetamine, building an AR-15 in my garage. That was one of my favorite things to do when I was drinking and getting high, right? That, riding motorcycles fast, relationships with women I shouldn't have been involved in, fighting, like, but I'm digressing. And as the 14th turned in the 15th, I had an appointment to drive up to Malibu to go to a PTSD program for suicidal combat vets. And had to make a decision to get in that car and go. And I had kind of made it up in my mind that I was going to a retreat in Malibu. Had no idea what was coming. I just had the opportunity to go back to this program and watch the newest iteration of it. And the guy that created this program, a man named Jake Clark, created this program called Save a Warrior. And when this thing kicks off, he gets with these guys. There's 18 men, all suicidal. One of them actively contemplating with a plan, means, and intent the night before to take his life. Another one thinking that if this thing didn't work, he was going to kill himself when he went home. And he told these guys, he said, it is not what you think. I know why you're here, and it's not going to go your way. And when I heard him say that, I was like, damn, that sounds like my experience in AA, right? The other thing that Gabe told me, and I should have started off with this, is that any time I get up here and talk, I better make sure I talk about two things, right? One of them is God, the other one is the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're sitting in this group right here and you got a problem with either God or the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, next 15 minutes are going to be kind of long for you. because God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous absolutely saved my life. So I get in my car. I actually get in my car. Anybody familiar with Joseph Campbell's Monomyth of the Hero's Journey knows that we are called to adventure, and the healing that comes in Alcoholics Anonymous is that adventure. Right? So I answered that call. I got in my car along the way, like any good alcoholic and enthusiast of cocaine. I stopped a few places along the way to feed my key. So I make it up to Malibu. The zero day of this program was at Pepperdine University. Is anybody familiar with the campus of Pepperdine? Great. So now I got to explain exactly where it is. It was at the Graduate Executive Center up at Pepperdine. It's up at the very top of the thing. So I drive around, I see where it is. I'm scared to death to go to this thing because, one, I'm sure that like I'm going to have to do some healing, and two, I don't feel like I am bad enough to be in that seat. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Right? Like, because I'm full of shame, I'm full of guilt, and I don't think I'm good enough. So I find this really cool parking lot. It's right below the pool, and it looks out over the Pacific Ocean, and it's this beautiful view of the Pacific Ocean, right? So I feed my key one more time. For those of you that are not sure what I'm talking about, I dip my key into a bag of cocaine and do a couple nice big lines like that. This is how I'm showing up to this program that's going to save my life, right? And this is a direct quote, it looked like I threw a powdered donut at the steering wheel of my car. Yeah, because I drove my buddy to the airport after this, and a lot had happened in that 5.5 days. So I show up to this program, gacked out of my mind and scared to death. And it took every ounce of courage that I had to walk up to those men and say, like, hey, I'm here for Save a War. I'm here for my 5.5 day vacation, or not vacation. What's the word? I'm drawing a blank with that already. Retreat in the hills of Malibu, right? So let's shoot back to the beginning. Like, how the hell did I get there? I grew up in San Diego. I grew up out in San Carlos, the mean streets of San Carlos, right? and it's always amazing how a kid from a lower middle class family that grew up in a middle class, maybe even kind of upper middle class neighborhood, still winds up an alcoholic in AA. But I started drinking and smoking weed when I was about 13 years old. By the time I was a senior in high school in September of 1990, I had quit smoking weed. And I was just drinking from that point until probably around age 40, 38 or 40, I was just drinking. Drugs weren't a part of it. By about 19, I was a daily drinker, drank as much as I could, when I could. You know, the doctor's opinion right here, from time to time, I might refer to this book here. I love the doctor's opinion is one of my favorites. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I like to get drunk. That is the reason I drink, right? Left to my own devices, without the cure of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, that's what I do. And that's what happened. I drank. That's what I did, right? I had a family, but I drank, right? I surfed, ended up living in Hawaii for 10, 12 years, but I drank, right? Joined the military, flamed out a couple of military careers because of my drinking. We don't need a drunk log, do we? So I get to this point where I'm drinking every day. I get in trouble a couple times. I never am able to see that any of the trouble or the problems in my life are a direct result of my drinking, right? Does that sound familiar? Right? You know, eventually I get to a point where I'm just in this deep, dark hole, and it's so deep, it's so deep, and it's the horizon is so far that I don't even know that I'm in it, right? Struggling with suicidal ideation through most of this stuff. And every 10 years or so, I have like a big blowout. I'm also a high achieving alcoholic, right? So I joined the military at age 21, and I remember I got sent. I wasn't in the Navy, but I got sent to the Navy's Alcohol Rehabilitation Center. It was the precursor of SARP out in Honolulu. And I'll never forget this guy. The senior chief. Tall, skinny Navy senior chief, sonar tech, sub driver guy, counselor, opens up my fallout file and he looks at me and he goes, I see here that you make the water that you walk on. Well, that's a fairly accurate description, but I don't like your tone, mister. And I managed to get into a verbal sparring match with this guy, and he finally closes my file, and he's like, there's nothing I can do with you. Go back to your command. And I'm on a tenant command on a Navy base, and by the time I get back, word is already there that Sean and his attitude have flared up. And they send me back, and I go through the program. And this was the first time that I got sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went through a two-week outpatient treatment program, and I spent the entire time like this. I also like to think that I'm one of the smartest people in any room that I'm in. Sometimes I actually am. That's a part of the problem is I'm really smart, but I make really poor decisions. My ex-wife once told me as I was out of my mind and she thought she had to take me to the hospital, poor judgment, and that stuck. So I was on double secret probation, right? Off of flight orders, put me on the midnight shift, all these punishments, and I basically screwed up that career because I was like, these son of guns won't let me get past what happened, won't let me get past this alcohol incident, right? That was not the case. I also like to remember things the way they didn't happen, and I like to color all the stories so they make me look better. Either make me look good or make me look bad. The fact of the matter is when I look back on it now, I couldn't get past it. I had a chip on my shoulder. I'm really good technically and tactically in the military. I'm a horrible soldier service member, right? So I get out. I end up back in the Army. To give you a little idea of, like, to sum up my military career, I get in trouble one time. Three separate Army write-ups on the same day for three separate things. I'm in with the first sergeant and the company commander. My first sergeant looks at me, and he says to me, Sergeant McGerald, you are either the best NCO I have or you are the worst NCO I have. I wish you would pick one and stick with it. I don't care which one it is. Thought about this big. Did I? No. That same first sergeant also. So I'm good at what I do. I'm smart. I'm high achieving. Sends me to, they send me as the operations NCO of an experimental expeditionary military intelligence battalion to Korea to liaise with the second ID for their warfighter expert. I'm like, yeah. And he pulls me in, he says, Sergeant McGerald, I'm sending you on this. Do not, and I repeat, do not create an international incident. And he was not joking. Like, and that's how it was, man. I am on or I am off, right? I am, what is it, digital, right? And the big book talks about that, right? In all other things, we're really good. We're really hot, you know what. When it comes to drinking, we're lunatics, we're insane, right? At this point, I'm a daily drinker, right? And when I'm not at work, I would say in the field, but that's not even true. In the field, I drink, right? I am more or less always insanely drunk, right? And I end up getting a couple DUIs. I get not kicked out of the Army, but I've basically screwed up two military careers. Got a couple divorces under my belt. Like I'm doing good in life. I am high achieving. Things are working for me. And those 2 military careers, 2 divorces, 2 DUIs are gonna come back. I'm foreshadowing because like Quentin Tarantino, right? I end up getting deployed. Did I mention that I've gone to war a couple times? Right. Yeah. So I also went overseas to Iraq a couple times. Don't let anybody tell you that they don't drink in Iraq and that there's no alcohol, because it took me all of about, I think, a week before the booze found me. I was drinking, right? Hungover, going out on patrols. Like one of the probably the most shameful part of my military service is I was hungover out on combat patrols, right? And the fact that nobody got killed as a result of that, like to this day, like blows my mind. Just pure dumb luck. Coincidence. I think not, right? The universe has got a plan, man. God has a plan. I don't know what it is. I don't pretend to know what it is, but I know I'm a part of it. And for whatever reason, God has conspired to put all of us together in this room. I apologize that you got to listen to this story. So I get back. I'm trying to go back. I'm trying to do everything that I can in my power to get back overseas, because overseas is the one place that life makes sense for me, right? Everything is black and white. High order violence is the order of the day, and it makes sense, right? And I can't do it. It's shocking, right? I look back and I'm no wonder nobody wanted to put me back. I get to the point where my mental health has deteriorated so badly that I am now what they call medically non-deployable for mental health, right? Basically, they're like, dude, you are so bad, you know what, crazy. There's no way in hell we're sending you. Ended up joining a motorcycle club. So I'm also, like, I'm playing soldier. I'm playing biker, outlaw biker guy, drinking, fighting, all that good stuff. And I get a call from the state of California mental health officer, and he says, hey, Sergeant McGerald, I heard about you. I was like, oh, good or bad? And he says, you know, we've got this program, Save a Warrior, up in Malibu. Are you interested in going? And that's when I hear, right? What's the word I'm looking for, Michelangelo? Retreat in Malibu, right? I told you it's participation, right? So I hear retreat in Malibu, and I say, yeah, I'm going to go to it. And that's how I ended up getting there, right? And I'm going to get back to the quality and the quantity and the nature of my drinking in a second. But that's what got me there. And we're sitting there on this zero day, and the guy that rostered me and got me up there, and the dude that I just trusted just enough to show out, turns out to be an LAPD cop. He's actually a detective with their major crimes unit, which is like the dudes that are chasing. His role is he was chasing terrorists around L.A. and doing all that stuff. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, right? I'd just gotten kicked out of my motorcycle club, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah, my drinking and bad attitude got me kicked out of an organization that was founded on drinking and fighting. poor judgment, right? Yeah, wow. So I'm like, it's got to be a cop. Of course it's a freaking cop, right? What else would it be? Because God has a good sense of humor. So we're doing this opening thing. We do this 2 truths and a lie, and I kind of start to come out of the shell a little bit and tell a little bit of things. And I'm like, oh, I just lost my wife, and I lost my motorcycle club, and, you know, kind of the sob story. And he says, I'll never forget it. This was probably the most important thing that any one person has ever said in their life for me. And he says, this is a safe place for you to drop what is killing you and start to heal. And that voice, I'm not saying it was God, but it wasn't my internal voice, goes, make that mother beep, put his money where his mouth is. And the thought popped into my mind, dude, you have got to give him. Oh, did I tell you that when I went up to, when I drove up there, I had like about what was left of an 8-ball of Coke and a couple grams of meth, because I had no idea how I was going to get through 5.5 days without something. I knew I couldn't drink. And I was going through that craziness, like, well, if I turn on the fan, whatever. So I got this in the pocket, and I'm like, all right, give him your dope and see if this really is a. So we take a break. He goes, let's take a bathroom break real quick. I'm like, all right, it's like time to put up or shut up, dude. Because I commit. I'm like, I'm gonna do this. And now I'm like, oh Jesus, it's another one of those things. I said I'm gonna do this. Now I got to do it. I say, Brian, come out to my car with me. I got something I want to give you. And he goes, okay. And we walk out to the car. I also had a trunk. In the trunk, I had a 300 blackout. I don't know if you guys know what that is. So AR-15, but a more powerful one. Because I had a plan. I had a list of people. And if I didn't, and I'm stealing kind of Gabe's verbiage, because it was one of the reasons I clicked so much with Gabe was something that he said. If these dudes didn't tell me something that worked for me, I had a list of people that I was planning on murdering and then suicide by cop. So, you know, sometimes we talk about, that got everybody's attention, didn't it? Sometimes we talk about my best thinking got me to A. My best thinking got me a list of people I was going to kill in a plan of suicide by cop. As Gabe says, that's premeditation, right? My plan B was premeditation. Yeah. Jake Clark says I was a category 5 shit show, excuse my language. And that was a perfect description of it. I did not mention or give him the rifle. But I did give him, I said, dude, I don't want this. And I meant that from the bottom of my heart. And I thought one of two things was going to happen. I thought one, he was going to say, go back home and come back when you're what they call dry wood. Because we got this cool welcome letter. And it's like, hey, you're coming up here. And I remember reading it says, you got to be 30 days dry wood. No drugs, no alcohol, including marijuana. Which I thought was funny because I hadn't smoked weed since I was like 19. Or sorry, 17. And I remember I was sitting on the couch with my girlfriend. I crumpled that. I remember saying, yeah, right, that's not going to happen. I threw it across the room, kind of like I did with the bag. So I give him the thing, and I expect either he's going to say, one, come back when you're dry wood, or he's going to say, two, turn around and put your hands on the car because you just gave me felony quantities of narcotics, because this was before, it wasn't a lot, like not like real felony quantities, but, I mean, they could have arrested me for it. And he pulls, like, door number 3. I'm a little fat. You know what? He puts his arms out like that, and he says, come back inside and take your life back. And at that point, I was all in on whatever those guys were selling, I was buying. And the reason I'm talking so much about this is, remember when I said I got bamboozled into AA? The dude that created this was 15 years sober at the time. There was another LAPD undercover narcotics officer who was 25 years sober at the time, was what was called a shepherd. There was another shepherd there that was a former Green Beret A-team captain, Silver Star, was getting recruited by Delta Force when he got a DUI and got kicked out and was 18 months sober. There was another Army Ranger there who was like 2 years sober at the time, right? All these dudes who were in AA had no idea, right? No idea that this program that in a very short period of time saved my life and shot me out of a spiritual cannon was all founded on the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? They say that Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are the foundations of modern Western spiritual movement, and I believe that 100%, right? Divinely inspired. So we start going through this, and these guys come up to me, and they're like, just don't leave, right? They teach me how to meditate, right? Prayer and meditation. Weird. We heard that before? First thing we learn there is how to meditate. So they teach us how to meditate, and they say, go back to your rooms. We're gonna start the program tomorrow. And four dudes, come up to me, because unbeknownst to me, they had a big conversation, and they're on the phone with Jake back in wherever he was in Ohio, and they're like, dude, we got a guy who is high as a kite right now. What do we do? Do we send him home? Do we send him to the hospital? And Jake's like, let it ride. And thank God they did. If they had sent me home, I would have never been able to get back, and I'd be dead today. Like guys like me, I should not be here by all rights and averages and laws of average. I should not be here right now. So they come up to me and they're like, just come back. And I'm like, dude, I didn't even think that going home was an option, but I'm like, I'm committed now. Like that was too hard what I just did. That was the single hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life was giving that guy those drugs, right? Up to and including going to the show. I will go back to Baghdad 100,000 times to not have to do that, right? And the guy gives me a 25-year token, right? 25-year token. I have no idea what an AA token is. Another one of the guys gives me the first big book I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous, because everybody there is sober or needs to get sober. So I just leaned into this program. And one of the things that we did is we came up with these SMART goals, right? Like, what are you going to do when you leave this program, right? When you get unstuck from this program, what are you going to do to go home to make all this stuff stick? And I come up with some BS things. I'm like, I'm going to go tell my parents I'm sorry for being such a crappy kid. I'm going to tell my son I love him. I'm going to call my ex-wife, and I'm going to say I'm sorry I was such a jerk. I'm going to call the other ex-wife and say I'm sorry I'm such a jerk. And the dude who was 20 years sober, unbeknownst to me, goes, uh-uh. This guy's a depth psychologist, all Carl Jungian, Joseph Campbell, all that woo stuff that I would have like slapped somebody for a day before. And he goes, no, what are you going to do? What about the drugs and the alcohol? And I know it's coming because I heard him talking to somebody else about this AA thing. And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, how about going to Alcoholics Anonymous, getting a sponsor, do 30 meetings in 30 days and take the 12 steps? And I'm like, I'll go to 30 meetings in 30 days. He's like, no, what about the... And I go like this. I go, I want to punch you so bad right now. And the dude goes, this is what I love about this guy, man. He kind of takes a step back like this, and he's like ready. And he goes, I know, but what are you going to do? And that voice again goes, okay. And I'm like, no. But it was out, and I committed, and I had some guys, some accountability buddies, right? And I come home, I call my girlfriend on the way down. I'm like, oh my God, she's like, how was it? I go, words cannot describe it. Those of us who have had the spiritual awakening from the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I'm talking about when you say, I had an experience I cannot describe. Words don't do it justice, right? I'm driving down, she goes, oh, that's so awesome. She goes, I got a six pack for you, waiting for you when you get home. And I go, about that. You know, I'm getting sober. Can you do something with it? I just don't want to see it. And by the way, I'm done with the drugs. I can't tell you what you need to do, but I can't be around that stuff either. And so she only smokes weed to this day. It doesn't bother me at all because I don't like weed. So I get home. I get home on a Saturday. Yeah, I think I get home on a Saturday. And by Sunday night, I got to get my butt to a meeting or I'm not going to be able to do the 30 meetings in 30 days, right? Because like any good alcoholic, I drag my feet because I know what I got to do. And so I do. I get on the app and I find that there is a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting really close to my house. And guess what meeting that was? Anybody ever been to the 9:30 every nighters at Waring Road? That meeting saved my life. As nuts as that meeting is. So I go down there, and I'm like, I'm going to go. I got to go. I'm looking for a sponsor now. And I had this list of, like, my sponsor's got to be a vet, and he's got to ride motorcycles, and he's got all of this crap, right? And it's all bull, right? Everything that was on that list was total bull. None of those things are necessary for a sponsor, for me or for anybody else, right? The one thing that wasn't on it, the two things that weren't on it were he has to have taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's got to have a God he can do business with. Because I didn't know about that stuff, right? So I get down there, and a couple nights in, did I mention I was in the 18-month DUI program at that time? Yeah, I go back to the DUI program, and they're like, how was your thing? And I was like, it's awesome. I started going to AA, and I'm going to get a sponsor, and I'm going to do that. And they're like, what do you mean started? Because I'd been signing all those myself. Right? So they're talking to me afterwards. They're like, listen, we're not going to kick you out of the program because something's changed. Like, they could see a change. And they're like, we're not going to kick you out of the program, but you got to, you know, those 76 or however many things, you got to get them. I go, don't worry about it. I'm going to a meeting every day. right? I got to do 30 meetings in 30 days, and I'm kind of like, I don't know what's going on, but something's going on. And I'm sitting down there at Waring Road one day, and I hear from the back corner, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew God had abandoned me. I'd broken all 10 commandments, and I knew God that your God had abandoned me. And I sat the you-know-what up and took note, because I was like, me too. Me too. When I got here, I'd broken all 10 commandments, and you guys kept talking. I kept hearing God, and I was like, you can take your God, and you can shove it where the sun doesn't shine, sideways, right? Because I've been overseas, and I see what they do in the name of God. They strap kids with Semtex and ball bearings and send them out into the town square. You know, your God can go. We'll fast forward to that in a second. I'm like, this dude may have something I can do. I might be able to do business with this cat. And so I tell my buddy who I'm in that 18th month program, when I told him I was going to go to AA, he goes, dude, I think I know a guy that'd be a good sponsor for you. I'm like, I got somebody else in mind, but turns out that person ethically couldn't be my sponsor anyways. Come run out. I'm like, dude, I got to talk to that Gabe guy. And he goes, that's the dude I was thinking of for you. You should go talk to him right now. I'm like, I'll wait till next time. And he goes, no, you should go talk to him right now. So I go chasing him across the parking lot, right? And I watch his truck lights drive off that way. Saved by the bell. I'm like, I missed him. I'll get him next time. Comes back the next time, and he's talking about the first AA meeting that he ever. Is it all right if I share the story, dude? All right. He's talking about the first AA meeting he went to. He had a 45 on the seat of the truck, and if he didn't hear something that worked for him, he was gonna eat that bullet. And I was like, dude, this is what I needed to hear. Like, because for me, this stuff is life or death. So I screw up all the courage I got, and I do the second scariest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I chase him out in the parking lot, and I ask his gnarled, grizzly old cowboy feet. You wearing boots tonight? Nobody gets to see. He had foot surgery anyway. The ugliest feet I've ever seen in my entire life. And I ask those things, will you be my sponsor? It's like asking another man to the prom. Hey, you want to go steady? Will you wear my pen? And he said, yeah. He said, yes. Come to find out, we're not allowed to say no when that happens. I made a lot of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them was the first dude that ever asked me to sponsor him. I said no because I was scared to death, didn't think I could do it right. And the only time I ever thought Gabe was going to physically harm me was that time I thought he was going to punch me in the face. He said, you never say no to a man who asks for help in Alcoholics Anonymous. And to this day, I have not. So I asked him, I asked those ugly shoes, those ugly feet, because he was wearing slippers, right? And he says, I'll take you through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But first, I got a question for you. Oh, we got tests in AA. Great. I'm good at tests, man. I got a law degree. Like, I'm good at tests. And he goes, are you an alcoholic? And you could hear the sound of my eyes rolling at that question. I'm like, dude, I'm in the parking lot of a Foster's Freeze at 10:30 at night asking you to be my sponsor in AA. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. You know the nerve? You know what he asked me? The nerve. How do you know? Well, funny you should ask. I got two DUIs. I flamed out two military careers. I got two DUIs. I got two ex-wife divorces. And he goes, no. I'm going to use colorful language. He goes, no. That just means you're an asshole and you make bad decisions. I'm like, great. I failed my first test in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, do you have a big book? And I had a big book. And he says, have you read it? I said, I started to, but it keeps putting me to sleep. He goes, yeah, that's the best sleeping aid known to man. Right? So, hey, you new guys, if you're ever reading the book and you keep falling asleep, me too. I get it, right? He says, there are five different definitions of what makes a man an alcoholic in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He goes, you start reading that thing, and you find those, right? Because I got to AA, I didn't even know what it meant to be an alcoholic. I thought it was all the crap, right? The failed relationships, the trouble with the law, you know, the assault with the deadly weapons, shit, just that stuff. And it wasn't. That's not what made me an alcoholic, right? I love the definition I like the most is this one right here on page 44. Because I make both of these, right? If, when you honestly want to find you cannot, when you find you want to, sorry, if, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, yep. Or, if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably an alcoholic. I have both of those. And that is not an and. That was pointed out to me. That's not an and. You don't have to have both of those. Either or. Either or. You may be suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Yep, that's me. So we got into it, and we found some of these other ones, right? The doctor's opinion, I love the doctor's opinion. You know, it talks about the phenomenon of craving. I'm like, what the hell is that, right? If you suffer from the phenomenon of craving, this doesn't occur in average temperate drinkers. That means normal drinking folk, right? When I pop the top on my beer, I want, once I have one, I want all the rest of them. Like Alfredo says, right? I never need a drink until I've had a drink. But once I've had one, I need all the rest of them, and they taste like cocaine. Any Me Toos? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? So we get into it, and we figure out, yeah, dude, okay. You're an alcoholic, all right? My favorite paragraph from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is at the bottom of page 25. I usually paraphrase it, but I'm going to read it verbatim. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, and at this point I'm an alcoholic for sure, dyed in the wool. I asked Gabe, I said, Gabe, I like cocaine too. Do I need to go to AA and NA? He says, no. He goes, you treat the alcohol, everything else gets a free ride. The dope gets a free ride. And that's been my experience too. There is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. Yep. We'd pass into a region from which there was no return from human aid. Absolutely. But two alternatives. So to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other was to accept spiritual help. When I heard that, right? It's like, take this thing to the bitter end, die in alcohol and drug fueled death, accept spiritual help. Like, how bad is that? How bad is that alcoholic death? Like, do I get, like, 10 years, right? Can anybody relate to that? Like, it's like, save your life, right, through God. And at this point, they're not even talking about God. They're just talking about spiritual help. And I'm like, that is the power of addiction. That is the strength that alcohol had on me, man. It's still like, dude, oh, God. Like, a sane person's going to be like, absolutely, give me this spiritual kit of this toolkit or whatever that you speak of. Like, and we, as alcoholics, are like, sometimes it's like trying to give away the cure to cancer for this thing, right? Like, hey, I got the cure to cancer. And they're like, F your couch, Eddie Murphy. Any of you guys seen Dave Chappelle before, right? This we did because we honestly wanted to and we were willing to make the effort. That's a key thing, right? Because I wanted to. I was done living. You know, when I said, like, for you new guys, we know why you're here. We know why you're here. All those court slips, Damien, Ulysses, we know why you're here, right? Because something ain't working. Something ain't working. And the question is, are you done suffering? Because if you're done suffering, we got the cure. We got the cure for cancer. Right? Rarely have we seen a person fail. Rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow our path. But that person that thoroughly follows our path gets and stays sober. Because our path is ongoing, right? We kind of bamboozle you guys with the whole one day at a time. Yeah, one day at a time for the rest of your life. And now when I'm taking guys through the 12 steps, you know, one of the first things I say is like, listen, homie. I'm going to take you through this like I was taking you through. I'm showing you how to take the next guy through. Because you owe a debt that you are never going to be able. Some people say that, like, we get this life that we don't deserve. I think that's a bunch of bull. I think we do deserve this life. Absolutely. We haven't earned it. I deserve the life I'm living. I have not earned it. I will never fully earn it. And the way I try to earn it is by continuing to take guys through steps and pay it back. So we got going on the steps, right? And the next thing that we come to is this whole God thing. It's like, do you believe in God? No. I don't know. Not really. I have no idea. Says, were you willing to be like even open to the idea that maybe there is such a thing as God? And at this point, I could emphatically say absolutely, because I had starting to see weird stuff happen all over the place. The sky was brighter, the colors were clearer, like I had hope. I didn't want to murder anybody and I did not want to shoot myself in the face, right? I'm like, something's going on and I don't know what it is and I can't definitively say it's not God. Up to that point, I was actively against the concept of God. And he verbally backs me into the corner, only to find out that this is just trite AA stuff that's been recycled over years and years. But to me, it was prophetic and changed my life. He says, Sean, are you willing to believe? And I said, yeah, I'm willing to give it a try. He says, do you believe that I believe? And I got to be honest. I'm like, yeah, dude, because you won't shut up about God. Right? Like, it's God this and God that and God this. I'm like, yeah, I do. He goes, that's all that matters. Says, that is enough to get started. He says that this book here, where's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is almost there. Sorry. Pause for dramatic effect as he finds 164. First 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It is a roadmap to find God, right? It is an instruction manual. It even says so here on, where is it? This page here. Right? Page 45. Had to find a power greater than ourselves. Right? But where and how do we do that? That's the purpose of this book. Fast forward to page 55. It tells us that deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental concept of God. Damn, that rolled off good, didn't it? Yeah. That sounded good. Yeah, right? Even a broken clock is right twice a day. But what we got to do is we got to search deep down inside of us for it, right? Fearlessly search deep down inside. I was pointed out that fearless does not mean a lack of fear in this arena, because I'm here to tell you that if any man tells you he is not afraid of anything, he is lying through his teeth. He may not be aware that he is lying to himself. That is not true, because we are all full of fear. We don't get into this room without being full of fear. Before I got sober, I would start a fight with the meanest, baddest looking dude, right? I would pick that fight. I'd hope and pray, please don't take me up on it. Please don't take me up on it. Please don't take me up on it. Because I was usually too drunk to be able to fight, right? Every once in a while, he'd take me up on it. My last good drunk was at the Turkey Inn in Ramona. Anybody ever been there? That's where I used to drink, right? Been kicked out of that place twice, right? That last night, I was so hammered, dude knocked me on my ass. I was carrying a pistol. I whipped out my pistol. I was going to shoot him. Lucky for me. Dude, God shows up. Yo, Rick Becker, you say, God never knocked a drink out of my hand. God never took a pistol out of my hand, but one of you guys did, right? One of my son's friends snatched that pistol out of my hand. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Excuse my language. Sent me packing. So we got to it, right? And we did the steps. And as a result of those steps, I had this spiritual experience. I had this spiritual awakening. On page 53, it says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade. So if you're new, let me ask you this. Are you in the middle of a self-imposed crisis that you cannot postpone or evade? Because if you can evade it, if you can postpone it, you're going to keep drinking if you're like me, right? You're going to keep drinking. But if you're done suffering, if you're done putting quarters in the jukebox, if you're done making wind chimes out of your 30, 60, 90-day tokens, right? We got the solution, right? Recycled trite AA stuff, and they're falling for it like it's original. I love it. Right? But we got the solution. Yep. You never have to drink again. I had to drink. I absolutely had to drink. It's what I did, right? I had to drink. We have to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? We read that before I even did my third step prayer. I heard it. I thought I understood it. I thought I knew it. You guys want to hear a funny story about Sean and sobriety? I'm going to tell you how that came to make sense to me. I have not picked up a drink or a drug in almost 8 years. Haven't relapsed, right? Relapse was not a part of my story, but I tell you what, I relapsed on the lifestyle, and it damn near got me, right? I went back into the motorcycle club life, right? Got kicked out of that same motorcycle club a second time, sober, and decided I had to have vengeance, right? Because I've got this story. I will write this story, and we will write these stories. And in these stories, we are right, we are valid, we are justified. We make ourselves look good to avoid looking bad, right? We conquer, we win to avoid losing. We don't get to be happy. And I was back in my story. And I'm telling you, any vets in this room? The vets are the worst with this, man. Because we will ride that goddamn story to our death. And you laugh, I'm not kidding, right? We will ride that story to our death, right? And I'm back in the lifestyle, right? And I'm not telling my sponsor all about it. I'm kind of half in this and that. Like I'm in another club. And I'm chasing around the old dudes around. So I'm going to AA meetings, being a spiritual gangster meeting, getting out and chasing these dudes around town. I walk into a bar, sober, about a year sober. What was I, about a year sober-ish? I start a bar fight, sober, with my old crew. I end up with a broken nose, a broken orbital socket, and a couple staples in the back of my head from a wrench. Yeah, right? Sober-ish. I'm like, I'm going to sleep it off. I can't. I'm fairly sure I'm concussed. I go to the VA ER, and I'm like, you guys have to lock me up because I'm losing my mind. I didn't tell them, if you don't lock me up, I'm probably going to commit a murder, right? Because I'm back in that mindset, right? The drink problem is gone. Like I have not questioned since the day I gave that dude the dope. I have not questioned the fact that I'm an alcoholic and that drinking will screw everything up. So I call Gabe. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. He comes walking in. I'm there. I'm a hot mess. He takes one look at me, and what does he do? Fucking laughs at me. He says, congratulations, you're one of us. You're going crazy sober. And then he says it. He says, God is everything, Sean, or God is nothing. What's your choice? And right then and there, it made sense. Right then and there, I got it. I am either all in as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, or I am something else. And I can't straddle the line between being a sober gangster like I like to think of myself, especially when you guys ask me to put on a suit and come and talk to you and everything. I can't straddle that line and being a thug. It just doesn't work. Half measures get us nothing, right? Yeah, like half measures avail us nothing. Like, I wish I could half-ass this thing. I wish I could half-ass this thing and get half-ass results, right? Like, if I could be, like, half-ass sober for half-ass work, that's me, dude, because I'm a half-asser. I'm a scared little boy. I'm a scared little boy in a 50-year-old man's body. Yeah, believe it or not, I'm 50 years old, looking pretty good for 50, right? But it's not, ow. Ouch. That hurt. Yeah. It's not what you think it is. It's not what you think it is, man. For you guys that are struggling, if you are an alcoholic who is struggling and you're trying to figure it out, there ain't nothing to figure out. That's not true. You got to figure out one thing and one thing only. Are you an alcoholic? Even before that, dude, you just got to figure, are you done suffering? Because that's why you're here, right? You're here because something ain't working. And this is not what you think it is. All of that is not what I thought it was. I was so scared to death of that God thing. The first two times I got sentenced to AA, I'm like, Yep. Nope. God. Later. I'll sign it myself. Figured out real quick what anonymous meant. Like I said, I'm smart. I know what anonymous means. It means if I sign it myself and they call up the meeting, they're going to be like, we can neither confirm nor deny whether he was here. I'm in. Right? And it didn't go my way. Right? It didn't go my way. The more I tried to make it go my way, oh, lack of power, that is my dilemma, right? The more I tried to make it go my way, the more I suffer, right? The more I suffer. I'm going to say something that not too long ago I said in a meeting, and a dude stood up and he walked out of the meeting and he told the other guys, when that guy comes out, I'm going to kick his butt. If what I'm about to say to you makes you want to kick my butt, please don't, because I'm 50 years old. I'm like a mediocre jiu-jitsu blue belt. Like, I don't want to fight anymore, right? And I don't run like I used to. But if you're sitting here, if you are an alcoholic who is either new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, or you're an alcoholic who's still suffering, and you're suffering, and you're hurting, and you're miserable, good. Good. I hope you're miserable. Alfred, earmuffs. One time and one time only. I hope you're fucking miserable. Because that's what it took for me, right? I hope you're miserable. I hope you're so miserable that you're willing to ask one of us that have taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, who have had the spiritual experience, who have begun to turn their life around and are living a life of purpose, of service towards other, of helping other men and women recover from this hopelessly, seemingly hopeless mind and body, trite AAism, right? Like, that's what I had to be. I had to be that miserable. And I don't hope that you're miserable so much as I hope that you're done suffering. Because like I said, we know why you're here. And it is not what you think. But it is not going to go your way if you try to manhandle it, right? There's no 14th step up there that says, figured it out, right? Doesn't say we came to have figured it out. And carried on. What it does say, though, and I'm going to end on this, because the biggest sticking point for me really was the God thing. It really was the God thing. And step two does not, I mean, these guys knew what they were doing, and they fine-tuned this. I just saw when I was in Ohio, there's a book that's about this thick. It's a copybook that's like the transcripts, the manuscript of the original big book in like the draft, and it is phenomenal. They knew what they were doing. Because they didn't say, we came to Alcoholics Anonymous believing in a power greater than ourselves, right? Because I sure as hell didn't come. Did any of you guys who show up here already have your God? Like, probably some of you guys did. Fair enough, right? That wasn't me. It says, we came to believe, right? It also says that if he is sought, God can't, could and would if he were sought, right? I came seeking. I sought God and came to believe in a God that does business, that I can do business with. This is not the sons of Abraham. You know, not one of the Abrahamic religions. It's one of the first things Gay pointed out. Sean, you got a problem with religion, not God. Rude. But he was right. You know, my concept of God has changed over the course of almost 8 years. My concept of God is not so much a deity or an entity, so much as concepts of love, tolerance, acceptance, humility, gratitude. These are things that I can turn my life and my will over to. I can turn my thought and my actions over to these, right? That's something I can do business with. I hope and pray that each and every one of you who is still suffering will latch on to one of us that has taken the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that has had the spiritual experience, that has something that you want. Not the car, not the girl, not the guy, not the fancy jewelry or whatever. But that je ne sais quoi, as the French say, right? Look at the big brain on Sean. That's something that you can do business with, right? It's been an honor and a privilege to stand in front of you and tell my story. My name's Sean. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. That was awesome. How about another round of applause? Tarantino would be proud. We can also thank the guys of the house for a wonderful spaghetti dinner. All right, thanks, guys. And we'll now close out with a prayer of Sean's choice.